This is Alan Bishop, head alchemist at Spirits of French Lick Distillery. We're glad to introduce to you our newest bottled and bond bourbons, the Lee W. Sinclair 4-Grain Bourbon and the Matty Gladden High Rye Bourbon. As always, these two bourbons are deeply rooted in the history of our location in the Black Forest of Southern Indiana. Always double pot distilled, never chill filtered, made using the finest grains, alternative and historic yeast strains that we propagate ourselves, and a methodology that once made Southern Indiana an epicenter of American distilling. Matured gracefully in 53-gallon No. 2 char, new American oak barrels, using a low 105 entry proof, the Lee Sinclair presents an oak-forward profile, which pushes forward the definition and conversation about bourbon possibilities, while the Matty Gladden graces us and demonstrates respect with her 35% rye mash bill. It's not just the spirits in the bottle, it's the spirits of the place. Respect the grain and drink responsibly.
Welcome back.
Or show me the way to the next whiskey bar. Oh, don't ask why. Oh, don't ask why. Show me the way to the next whiskey bar. Oh, don't ask why. Oh, don't ask why. Oh, if we don't find the next whiskey bar, I tell you we must die. I tell you we must die. I tell you, I tell you, I tell you we must die.
Thank you, Jim Morrison and the Doors from a 1967 concert at the Matrix in Los Angeles. We appreciate that intro every single time. I love that special edition. It makes it seem like the Scotchy Bourbon Boys are right there listening to Jim Morrison and the Doors in the man cave. I love that aspect of it. I think that's what we're going to go with going further. But welcome, everybody. This is another tiny special edition podcast. I like to do a couple of these a month. This is my second one. The first one went over pretty good. I don't promote these like I promote the main podcast with guests and all the other Scotchy Bourbon Boys. I just let this run straight to all the podcast formats where we're at Apple Podcasts and iHeartRadio and Spotify and Alexis and all those different places. And it runs. And it seems to the first one did way better than I thought. So here we go. I'm going to do a couple of these a month. And this theme for this particular podcast is the whiskey snob. Now, what is a whiskey snob? There's a lot of different aspects of what a whiskey snob is, but I'm talking about the specific kind. So I'll go through a couple of the different kind and then exactly what I'm talking about, because the whiskey snob that I'm talking about is a little bit different. There's a lot of different articles, and some people, especially when it comes to Scotch, Scotch is kind of where the whiskey snob was developed. The bourbon and American whiskey did not really have a whiskey snob until recently. For the most part, it's some, you know, generally what it is, a whiskey snob is someone who has a fair amount of knowledge of pretty much everything about the whiskey that he's being a snob about, or the group of whiskeys he's being a snob about. Now, there's some really, really annoying whiskey snobs. And then there's people who educate themselves and like to share their knowledge. And that's kind of the general aspect of what a whiskey snob is, in a not a negative term. You know a lot of stuff. You feel that you've educated yourself and you know enough about, let's just say, Scotch and all the different Scotches and the difference between Scotch, Irish whiskey, bourbon, what you like about it. Because whiskey, the great thing about whiskey is it is a personal experience. And when you get excited about whiskey, it's kind of all the different tastes and what some of the reviewers come up with. And then you can taste what the reviewers are coming up with. And then you start to, you know, get into what, you know, what whiskeys you love and why you love the whiskeys. But you get to a point, because whiskey is so personal, that you can feel that you are above somebody who drinks and has drank Jim Beam their whole life. They might have drank it every day their whole life. They love it, and that's what they like to drink. But you personally think you know something better than them because you've sampled thousands and thousands of different whiskeys. You've come up with 15, 20 that you absolutely love. You have the bottle, you drink, but you think that for some reason, because you like a variety and you've, you know, really figured out what from drinking so many different whiskeys that you have done something that person who has been drinking straight white label Jim Beam their whole life, and you somehow are above that person, or you know more than that person. And and that's where we get into the snobbery. Now, granted, a person who is very educated in bourbon or scotch, and they drink a lot of that could be correct, that person who does drink Jim Beam White and is happy with Jim Beam White and that's what they drink and they don't drink anything else. And now that you've sampled so much, you might know more about it. But once again, the thing that makes you a snob is that you can only go by your own experiences. And yes, you've tasted thousands or hundreds or thousands of whiskeys, but at the same time, that's what you wanted to do. And the person who has had thousands of shots of Jim Beam on a regular basis and loves Jim Beam and isn't interested in anything else, they aren't below you somehow. And this is where snobbery, and especially some people, just because they have had more experience in whatever, they think somehow that they can judge other people on what they like. And it's absolutely ridiculous. I mean, come on. Let's think about that. It's kind of like, to do that realistically, either you're compensating for something that you totally lack and you're trying to make people feel small by somehow that your whiskey knowledge is some important things that are going to change the world. And because you know it and you've tasted more and you think you know more about what someone else should or shouldn't like, that somehow you are above them. That's absolutely ridiculous. And I see it all the time in the groups. And like I said, I've done some research on this. It's kind of like, you know, when you get into, and the snobbery was really coming out of Scotch. And when you look at the Scotch and the Irish whiskeys, and that they've been around so much longer as far as marketing and what people do, as far as how people have purchased and where they've been, you know, you have these distilleries that have been marketing for, you know, you are talking about some of the stuff that happened when it started is in the 1600s. And you're here, yes, people were distilling in this, you know, the late 1600s into the 1700s, but it wasn't a marketing thing. They were distilling for themselves. I mean, the Jacob Beam, when he started the Beam process and everything, yes, but he wasn't marketing, and then he was selling to friends, and then it turned into whatever and evolved like it was. But in Scotland and Ireland, they were already marketing. I mean, a lot of the stuff hitting the grocery store, the Johnny Walkers and everything, and the blends and everything, and that was all kind of a definitive thing. And it really wasn't until the late 1800s and early 1900s that bourbon started to become a really sought after thing. And then you got Prohibition, and then the war interrupted, and then the 1960s is when it defined itself into becoming what bourbon is by the act of Congress, the resolution that what bourbon was. And even to the snobbery that Jack Daniels, this statement was completely because Jack Daniel's had been determined that it wasn't bourbon because of the Lincoln process earlier. This resolution by Congress included Jack Daniel's as bourbon. Jack Daniel's doesn't want to be considered bourbon. It's Tennessee whiskey, but in the class of what is bourbon, it is. Now, people will argue this to the death. I mean, I've seen this argument separately at least 50 times in the last 2 years. Jack Daniel's is bourbon. Jack Daniel's isn't bourbon. The people, the distiller at Jack Daniel's says that it's bourbon, but they're Tennessee. I mean, it's ridiculous. It's a ridiculous argument. Jack Daniel's is Jack Daniel's, Jim Beam. If what you want to do, yes, the resolution says it's bourbon, but the process is a little bit different, which makes it taste different. And if you like Jack Daniel's, you like Jack Daniel's. And if you like Jim Beam, or if you like both, you can do both. Now, today, and salute to talking about whiskey snobbery, I am drinking Basil Hayden Caribbean rye. It is 80 proof. That's another place where snobbery happens. Somehow, the whiskey snobs of today think that, and these are probably the worst offenders. When you look at it, it's like, really? So there's a person out there that has developed his palate, and he can now has drank enough whiskey that when you're drinking a barrel strength, it's something that his palate's used to. You really can get the 3D effect of a rich, full-bodied barrel strength bourbon. And granted, I love that. I love the barrel strength bourbons. There's no doubt. 117 proof, 127 proof, 135 proof. I love them all. There's pretty much, when it comes to barrel strength, one of my favorite barrel strengths, Booker's and Wild Turkey Rare Breed, both something you can get. Their Rare Breed is a lot cheaper, and I love that. I love Booker's keeps coming out, and it's a little bit different every time. So you're paying a little bit for that. But overall, I love barrel strengths. I love the, you know, full proofs. They are rich bodied, delicious bourbons. And lately, even the Chicken Cock 15-year barrel strength that we had, that I had in the past here on the podcast, is just fantastic. I'm not going to, but that doesn't mean that other whiskey, just somehow, if you drink that other whiskey and you like barrel strength, that person is a piece of shit. And this is how these whiskey snobs come off. It's just like, I won't drink anything under 90 proof, or nothing from 90 proof. It's too thin. If you drink 90 proof, you don't know what you're talking about. Or whoever drinks, you know, Basil Hayden is, you know, I've heard Basil Hayden gets the worst rap. And the Basil Hayden people are completely fans of Basil Hayden. I know so many people, that's what they drink. They walk in to the bar, they order Basil Hayden on the rocks. That's another aspect of a whiskey purist. Like, for instance, I have this Thrillist, an article that he wrote, and here are a couple things that he says that makes you a whiskey snob. You cannot abide by people putting ice in their whiskey. You don't usually add water to your whiskey, but when you do, it's craft Scottish water with an eyedropper. You won't even touch white whiskey. Now, white whiskey, everybody knows, moonshine or very young whiskey, White Dog, it has its purpose. Especially what I love is at the distilleries, that's the baby whiskey that's going to go in. And you kind of get a taste for the white whiskey to see what distillery is. You know, I've had some White Dog that hasn't been very good at a distillery, and then others that are, you can just taste the sweet corn. So you know kind of what the distillery is doing with their pot stills, or with their with all the different, oh my gosh, now I'm having a mental block on the different types of still column stills. I can't believe it. It's each distiller you talk to, they have their own process. Some of the big distilleries where they're making stuff to taste the same, for instance, Jim Beam, the process is massive, but they have it technically down because the whole world wants to drink Jim Beam. But the smaller runs, people have that process and they mess around with it a little bit. They add certain things. They do different temperatures, different proofs that they're taking it off. Everything's different. I mean, they follow the bourbon rules and whatnot. So the Basil Hayden, when you talk to Fred and Freddie Ngo, and Fred talks about Basil Hayden, there's an aspect of Basil Hayden, he this is words right out of his mouth that there won't be a single barrel, and that you won't do a barrel proof because the Basil Hayden fans are very strict. What they like that smooth, mellow, easy going down whiskey taste, and that's what they like. So when you're drinking this Caribbean rye, and I'm not a big fan of rye, but adding in on this rye, adding in the rum finish, it basically takes that rye, I call it a celery taste, and turns it to coconut to me and makes it sweeter. So this rye, which isn't a pure Kentucky straight rye, is a very good pour. It's got a little bit more spice than Basil Hayden, but not much, but it's basically a very delicious drink. Now, just because I like this doesn't mean I can't appreciate barrel proofs, or somehow I'm a piece of shit because I like lower proof bourbons. And for some reason, these whiskey snobs think they know so much, and they'll be all over you on Facebook, or they'll be and it's kind of like the other aspect. Now, there is a level for me that I think is ridiculous. For instance, if you're going to buy, you know, and pay $300, $129, $199 for Pappy, and you're going to take it and you're going to mix it with root beer, that for me is a little bit ridiculous. But if that's what you want to do, if you have that kind of money, I think that you could buy a $20 bottle of Ezra Brooks, or a $20 bottle of Jim Beam, or a $20 bottle of Jack Daniels. And if you're going to put root beer in it, it's pretty much whiskey in root beer. Not, you know, the Pappy doesn't make that particular root beer taste better. Now, quite frankly, with that said, I've never put Pappy in root beer. So as far as, you know, there's just these people, I know the posts are designed, I don't even think half the people actually put the Pappy in the root beer, but they got Pappy and they're happy they got Pappy, and they want to incite these whiskey snobs by just placing the Pappy on the counter and then putting root beer in a glass and saying they put the Pappy in the root beer, even though they didn't really do it. But if they did, guess what? I'm not snobbish enough to tell them they can't do it, because drinking whiskey is a personal experience. If you want to put Coke in it, you want to put ginger ale, you love to mix Manhattans, you love old fashions, you know, drink it. You know, I make a drink called the Kentucky Mueller. If I'm in a happy mood and I want to get drunk fast, I will start mixing, because mixing with the sugar aspect will actually get me to a place where I'm party drunk. Whereas if I'm sipping on something, I can have six or seven pours and still not really be drunk. I'm just relaxed. Now, I don't have six and seven pours very often. I'm not trying to. I usually, when I'm sipping, I do one a night for my health reasons, because it's healthy to drink bourbon one a night. But then after that, I might have two or three or four, depending on if I'm out with friends or whatever. But I try and keep my consumption down to less than 14, 15 pours a week, which is considered healthy by the nutritionists and everything and the studies and all that. So that's where I'm at. And then also, it is a little bit, you can gain weight if you drink much more than that. And I like to keep myself on the thinner side of heavy. So, but the whiskey snob, let's get back to that. the whiskey snob. So the worst is Basil Hayden, because if you ask some people about Basil Hayden, I mean, it's either all or nothing with that stuff. Some people are like, I love it. Some people are like, oh my God, I can't believe you drink it. Now, but you come across these whiskey snobs, and these are the bourbon snobs lately that I've been encountering. And once again, it's based off of three things. One, proof. Then two, knowledge. Now, some people think their knowledge of the whiskey, of bourbon, and I have a really good knowledge of bourbon these days. I'm branching out into other aspects of bourbon throughout the United States, starting to taste the bourbons in different different parts of the United States, Colorado, Indiana, New York. I'm going to be going down to Florida hopefully this summer or fall and check out a couple distilleries down there. It's pretty much a growing, huge growing industry, and it's even growing bigger in Kentucky. There's a lot of stuff in April. Well, I'm going to be going down to Kentucky, and then also in September. So I'm going to be touching base. We're going to be doing a lot of podcasting down there. Tonight's podcast that we'll be loading tonight will be we're covering Limestone Branch and Yellowstone with Stephen Beam. Not on the podcast, but he is an actual Scotchy Bourbon Boy, and we're going to be going down and seeing Stephen in April, and then doing a podcast from the Limestone Branch Distillery. So I'm looking forward to that. Very much so. But when you talk about all the different distilleries, you know, you're talking about the Limestone Branch distilleries, and you meet Stephen Beam, and you talk to Michael Veach. You know, he's a blogger, writer. He writes his own website, you know, and you talk to these people, they understand, you know, you understand all of what they're trying to, you know, what's coming across, what they're trying to do. And they all say the same thing. What does bourbon mean? What does whiskey? And they all say, drink it the way you want to drink it. Drink it with water. Drink it with ice. Fred No says he likes it with a backsplash of, you know, his Jim Beam with a backsplash of water. You know, you just talk about all the different people and all the different things that are going on in the industry. And the people who make the bourbon are not the whiskey snobs. The people who are part of the bourbon community are not the whiskey snobs. It's for somehow these people who just think on social media, and it's mostly on social media, or every once in a while you run into them in real life, that somehow they know more than you. Now, I've got another aspect here. And this one was, so this colleague of mine is a whiskey snob. And he said, and he found out that I liked whiskey too and started to talk about it with me. But when I started to name some of the brands I liked or have tried, he basically said they were all shit. And if I name the Balmore 19 year at $200 a bottle I once tried, he obviously said he had tried it as well. But that it was nothing special. And then Gatto was times better. And he wouldn't hear a word about what, you know, he does. Most whiskey snobs are not, that's what I wanted to come across. They're not interested in what you think. It's only what they think. There's been even people in the critiquing industry that it's kind of like you, it's not about what just you think. It's like, if you're a critic, you're telling people what you think. They want to hear what you think, but they want it as a guide to find out what they like. So a lot of times, like for instance, I find that my palate is a little bit similar to Michael Veach's in most things, but every once in a while there's a bourbon or a rye that he critiques that I've had that I read that it's not close to what I was thinking, especially when it comes to rye, because for some reason my taste buds taste a lot of stuff in rye, and a lot of the stuff I taste in rye is not what I want in my whiskey. I love vanilla, caramel. I love I've always been a vanilla caramel kind of person, pecans, nuts, that kind of thing. It just was something. So a lot of the bourbons that you're getting that caramel and that vanilla taste out of. Now, if you get a little bit of dark chocolate, I like that. I used to chew on my glove when I played baseball when I was a kid. And so I get a little bit of leather. I get a little nostalgia out of that. So those are all personal experiences. But, you know, when it comes to like the wood tannins, in there, I'm not a big fan of too much oak or too much bitter oak or bitter wood. I can taste that. And it's like, if you finish with a bitter tannin, I'm not going to. But that doesn't mean that someone else didn't have a great experience because they used to whittle and they love the smell of wood and oak, or they made guitars, or they did something. And so that to them, that's like what they're looking for. So I'm not going to sit there and judge anybody based off of what my palate is. I'm going to tell you what I think it is. I'm going to tell you what's in it. I'm going to tell you if I like it or not. But that's just a guide. It's like if I don't like wood tannins that are a little bitter and someone else likes it, it's like, you know, go for it. You know, I'm all for pushing, you know, what people like. That's why they make so many different ones. That's why so many people try so many. It's so much fun tasting this stuff. But to then take that one step forward and try and be a whiskey snob. I mean, come on. I mean, is there anybody who really likes it? What is the definition of a whiskey snob? Usually, if you are a whiskey snob, you're an asshole. And the definition of an asshole who doesn't care about anybody else except for what they care about. So it basically, you could call them whiskey assholes. But these people, for instance, this guy was asking what he should do about this guy. And everybody else was like, the one person said, okay, you know, this is how you can get along with a whiskey snob or a whiskey asshole. If he starts saying something bad, say, oh my God, you have a lot of whiskeys. Let's taste together. Bring me over and, you know, pour me some pours right there. Now you've shown you've got interest in what they like. Okay. But at the same time, if this guy's a snob and he's going to pour you, you know, invite you over for 5 or 6 pours at, you know, from $200-$300 bottles, you're just in a win situation. So what you want to do in these cases is win. So definitely go ask him about it, get to a point, have him say, oh, I'd love to have you take me out and get me some whiskey that you like. Maybe let's just do a night out where you pick the whiskeys and get him so that he's paying for it. So, you know, turn the tables so that you have an advantage on these people. Same thing. It's just like the proof people are really tough to deal with. But at the same time, you know, that's one of the reasons why they're the true whiskey snobs, because there's no way to get around it. It's kind of like you're going to have to, you can't even ask. It's just like, well, I won't drink anything under 90. Well, I've had a lot of good bourbons. It's most scotches and Irish whiskeys. And I'm saying most because now it's changing. Now that the barrel strength is so prominent in the bourbons, almost every single bourbon on the market now has a barrel strength expression that's out there, or a full proof or whatnot, that the scotches are now just starting, and the Irish whiskeys are starting to put out cask strengths. Whereas before, it was 80 proof, straight up 80 proof for pretty much everything. If something went a little bit higher, that was a special kind of addition. So now with what's been happening, they're having to come up and bring up their proofs. But it's still 100%. I like higher proofs, but I'm not going to rip on anybody who's drinking bourbon that's drinking Basil Hayden, because honestly, I broke in with Colonel Taylor and Basil Hayden about 4 or 5 years ago. And I think actually the Colonel Taylor and Basil Hayden when I started was about 6, 7, but I didn't know what I was drinking back then. I just knew that I liked it. But then about three years ago, I started getting into it, but really heavily with the Basil Hayden and the Colonel Taylor. And I love them both. And I still love them both today. I know Colonel Taylor's 100 proof. It's a proof, you know, person's, you know, they'll drink it. It's, you know, I won't drink anything under 100 proof. Well, Colonel Taylor as a bottled in bond qualifies, but 80 proof Basil Hayden, I will sit back and relax to. Now, the other aspect that I've learned about, you know, bourbons is just because it's higher proof, for some reason, there are some whiskeys that are lower proof, especially Irish whiskeys. One night we were drinking Irish whiskeys. We had the four different Irish whiskeys. We drink four different Irish bourbons all the time on the podcast, including barrel strength ones. I got shit faced from the 480 proof Irish whiskeys. And I don't know why. It was just like all of a sudden I was drunk. So proof doesn't always mean what happens to your bloodstream and the how drunk you actually get. But the higher proofs are definitely fuller bodied proofed bourbons, and they are good. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and say they're not good. But once again, I don't think higher proof bourbons make lower proof whiskeys bad. If it's a good whiskey, it's a good whiskey. If it has a good taste that you like and it's got a taste profile, just because it's not as full bodied doesn't mean you can't drink it. So with that said, when you come across, you know, when you're coming across a bourbon snob, you got to treat it one way. Now, I got one last thing, I believe right here. Yes. Some of the things, that bourbon snobs say and their translations. Here was a great one. I got into whiskey back before the bourbon boom. This is a bourbon snob, okay? Someone who thinks they're above you because for some reason they were back into it before the bourbon boom. Like somehow that's special. I remember when Pappy Van Winkle introduced the 20-year-old and buying a bottle off the shelf for retail. I figured I've tried over 1,000 whiskeys, okay? Once again, from a standpoint of who, why and who are you trying to impress? But the translation for him is, I bitterly resent all you new people coming into my scene because you've made it impossible for me to get not just said bottle of Pappy, but even a bottle of Blanton's when I feel like it. But even so, I'll condescend to share my self-declared expertise with you if you kiss my ring. It's a great translation. This is from the Whiskey Reviewer, okay? And it was from March he had this in. And then I have another one. And oh, yeah. If I were at a bar and the only things they had on the shelf were Jack Daniels and Johnny Walker Red, I'd drink the water. I'm about as much fun as a brown paper bag full of a cigarette ashes. Great translation on there. There was one other one. I thought this, I was pretty excited to try the new Parker Heritage, but was pretty let down by it. It wasn't even that old, and the only thing special was the barrel finish. So Heaven Hill was trying to cover something off and pass us some shoddy goods. It was so much better when they got it started. Translation, I'm so hidebound, I only see age statements and don't understand technical things like extra long toasting periods, heavier chars, or appreciate a good barrel finish when the barrel head smacks me in the face. Also, I want you to know I've tasted most or all of the whiskeys in the series just for kicks. So, once again, the other one, the last one I wanted to read was, all craft whiskeys suck. It's made in little 5-gallon barrels. It costs too much, and I wouldn't drink it if you paid me to. I think it's still 2010 and don't know anything about what's happened with small distilling in America over the last decade because I can't be bothered to pay attention to what is happening down the road from my house. So I've missed that most small distillers have been using bigger barrels for years, as well as the growing crop of craft bottled in bond whiskeys. Exactly. That's exactly the kind of person a whiskey snob is. They've formed their opinion. They've tasted, but they just think they're so much better than you. And the serious one was the I remember to make you feel, you know, condescending that you remember when you could get certain whiskeys off the shelf. But at the same time, when I first started going into the liquor store, a lot of the whiskeys that are there now weren't there when I started. The expansion has gotten so diverse. There's so much more that you can pick up that it's a wonderful thing. But that is exactly what I wanted to make as far as the whiskey snob aspect of what, you know, I think... And it started with, you know, it really started with the scotches, and those whiskey snobs have been around for a long time. I know this because before I really got into whiskey, which is about 4 or 5 years ago, when I really started to get into it, I drank whiskey. I mean, I got drunk off of Wild Turkey 101 for my 18th birthday, and I had Maker's Mark after a Packer game that I still have the bottle. My dad drank Jack Daniels. I had a lot of Jack Daniels single barrel, but I didn't know what I was drinking back then. And the people who were doing this and starting to get into this type of, you know, most of the people who were really into it were into the scotches. So I would talk to someone and they'd tell me about their scotch collection and how they have this. And, you know, and I'm not as much into scotch as I am into personally. The person who's more into scotch is Young Nose, who, you know, I podcast with weekly. And with those, that I would always come across the person who would have the scotch collection. And what I always say is, pour me what you think I would like. I learned, drinking some Johnny Walker, I like a little bit of smoke, but I didn't like really, really smoky, which I learned peaty, whiskeys, scotches. And so as I just kept evolving, now my brother-in-law is Irish. So a lot of Jameson, you know, that type of thing. I love Irish whiskey. It's not as diverse as bourbon or scotch. There's not as many. But some of the Irish whiskeys go down really, really, really good. So with that said, you know, once again, it's like, what is, you know, what do you do about the whiskey snob? That's how we'll finish up. Well, one, you could just ignore him. Or two, you could try and get into an argument with him. But that is usually a losing proposition because they're so into themselves and they think they're such big assholes that they think they know something. They will just come back at you, whatever. I found if you really, really want to piss a whiskey snob off on social media, come back at him with a condescending comment yourself, then unfriend and block him. He will lose his mind. That was the first one that I learned. I do it all the time. I don't have time on any of my platforms to deal with people. That the greatest thing of social media for my platforms is that I love to be kind and nice, and I'm kind and nice to everybody until someone is condescending to me, uses foul language, or thinks somehow they're a whiskey snob, and then I will pull out the dark side, throw it down. But the key to it is the unfriend and block, because usually they will find somehow to, they will spend time how to get back on and comment to you like, oh, that's so mature. And then the greatest thing is when they come back at you again, you block them again. It irritates them to the point where they lose their minds. I love doing it. It's one of the funnest thing. I suggest it. That's how you deal with anybody who on social media doesn't know how to behave or think that somehow because their opinion and their life experience make them think they know better on anything. It's like everybody's life is their life and they have the rights to their own opinions, their own votes. Everybody can, it's the great thing about whiskey is most people just get along no matter what, because the common thing is whiskey. And so many different whiskeys are out there and there's so many different whiskeys to try that it's just a blast. And most people who are doing that are having fun and are friendly because whiskey is friendship and it equals fun. So now the last thing you could do, one of the last things you can do with the whiskey snob, and it's basically one thing, if you're going to go back at a whiskey snob, pick a subject that you know the best and then kind of duel on them. Something that you've come, that you can guide, you can always guide that conversation. Well, they're like, well, I don't only drink 100 proofs. Well, if you want to get into it with them, there's a lot of 100 proofs that I guarantee you they've never tried. For instance, the sponsor of our show, The Spirit of French Lick, the two bottled in bonds that they just released, 100 proofs of Lee W. Sinclair and Maddie Gladden, you could drop on them, and most of them are not this good. We'll say, well, as far as 100 proofs go, I really like the Maddie Gladden from the Spirit of French Lick distillery. That 100 proof is amazing. And Alan Bishop and what he's doing there and his distilling process really has defined a profile for Indiana bourbons. And that 100 proof is fantastic. And then they don't, nine times out of 10, you've just named something that most of them, because of who they are, they're, if you go after Stagg, they know Stagg Jr., but who doesn't? Or they know, you know, what, you know, their barrel proofs are pretty much the standard barrel proofs across. Pick a barrel proof, for instance, the Chicken Cock, 15 year barrel strength bourbon. That's another one you could just lay down, tell them how awesome it, tell them what you like. And then they're the ones who are going to feel like you, now you've just taken it. You're not being a whiskey snob. You're being a knowledgeable person of how much you like this particular one. So a lot of times what I do is if they make that comment, usually I'll go back into what I know about whiskey. And a lot of times, if they're not just being total jerks, but they're just being that whiskey snob, I'll come back and hit them. And 99 out of 100 times, they have no idea what you're talking about. And it just shuts them up instantly. Because you've basically, them trying to make you feel small because you like Basil Hayden, because they only drink, you know, foolproof whiskey. Then you nail a foolproof whiskey that they never tasted and tell them how good it is. You win. So that's what I wanted to, you know, go over, cover. That's the we covered the whiskey snob tonight. We all know, we've all been associated. I've given you a couple ways of dealing with them. I've talked about all the different ones, you know. We talked about the one, the worst one, the assholes out there. And, you know, overall, they exist. There's nothing you could do. The world's a shitty place. There's no doubt about it, because there's always a lot of shitty people out there. But from the standpoint, I hope I gave you a little bit of insight of what a whiskey snob is to me, and then also a little bit of insight on how to deal with that. So that is what I wanted to do this week. And I hope you like it. If you like us, we are the Scotchy Bourbon Boys. You can find us www.scotchybourbonboys.com. We are the Scotchy Bourbon Boys at gmail.com. If you want to drop me a line, you also can messenger me on Facebook. I'm Jeffrey Mueller, but we also have the Scotchy Bourbon Boys Facebook page and group. You could find us on Twitter at ScotchyThe. And you can also find us on YouTube under the Scotchy Bourbon Boys. And please, if you like what you're hearing, go to the format that you're listening to, subscribe and like us, but also go to our Patreon account under the Scotchy Bourbon Boys. And there's, I believe, 8 different ways that you can support us. Get some swag. You could buy the swag off the website, or you could support us through the Patreon Foundation. It's any little as $3 a month up to if you want to be a sponsor of the show. So with that said, we covered some of that. Take us out, Mr. Morrison. Uh-oh. Did that? My speaker died, so let's just do this. Have a great day, everybody.
Or show me the way to the next whiskey bar. Oh, don't ask why. Oh, don't ask why. Show me the way to the next whiskey bar.